Mitzvah Kuf Pei Vav 186, Shelo Lishchot Kodshim Chutz Lazara, not to shecht sanctified animals or birds or whatever outside of the temple courtyard, which of course is the proper place for them to be shechted. Shelo Lizbach Kodshim Chutz Lazara, Vezeh Yikarei Shochet Bachutz, is found all over the Gemara, that you find something called Shchutei Chutz, that this is shechted outside, or somebody shechting outside. So as outside mean, it means outside the temple courtyard. Jenemar, Asher Yishchat Shor Ochesev Oez, that if you shecht it outside the Beis HaMikdash, Vel Pesach Olamed Lo Avio, you didn't bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting, which of course is translated in later generations to the Beis HaMikdash, Dam Shafach V'Nichras, if you have spilled blood, and you should be cut off, this soul should be cut off from his or her people, who shechts an animal outside the Beis HaMikdash, that's a sanctified animal. But it just says that if you do this, then you'll receive the penalty of Kares. It never says in this Pasuk, it's forbidden to engage in this activity.
Well, I mean, most laws don't say, you cannot, cannot do something. Mostly say, if you do something, this is a penalty.
Yeah. Right, but we have a principle, says the Sefer HaChinuch, Mekaymalon lo anash elim kein hizir, that we, the Chazal assume that there has to be an explicit statement that something is forbidden in order for a penalty to be added onto that. You can't just have a penalty, you have to have somewhere that it says the prohibition. Sometimes you got to go and use some creative thinking to figure out where in the Torah itself it says that you're not allowed to do it, but and then even if it says explicitly that there's a penalty for it. That the Azhara, in fact, that the prohibition is not stated explicitly in the Torah, but it's learned out with a hekesh, which means analogy. So what's in that? What analogy is it talking about? Kidisa ba gemara zvachim sham rezichon levracha sham. The hashochet amale bachutz chayev al shchita v'chayev al ha'aliyah. That if you shecht outside the temple courtyard and you offer the animal up on some altar outside the Beis HaMikdash, which is of course we know to be usur as well. So you're responsible. You're penalized both for the slaughtering and for the offering up. What it means offering up, of course, it means burning on some sort of altar type structure. The ikshu sham, and the Gemara asks the question, Bishlama ha'alok siv onesh uksiv hazara. It states the penalty and it states the prohibition. Onesh al pesach al moed lo hevio. That's what it says over here in our pasuk. That if you don't bring your holy animals to the temple, then you should be cut off. Azhara hishamer lecha pentale olosecha. So where it says in the Azhara is, be very careful lest you offer up your burnt offerings, b'chol makom, whatever the Torah says, in any place, it has to be specifically to the Beis HaMikdash. Uchde Reb Avin, this goes in accordance with the opinion of Reb Avin, Dam Reb Avin, Am Reb Eloi, komakom shenemar hishamer pen va'al, enu ala mitzvahs lo sase. Even though it doesn't say, thou shalt not, lo signo, but uses other negative type of formulations. In me, when it says, hishamer means be very exceedingly careful about something, or if it says pen, lest you do this, or if it says al, which of course is an alternate word for lo, which is used in negative commands. So that means that the thing that is in that pasuk that follows these words is a mitzvah lo sase, is a negative commandment, even though it doesn't follow normal formulation, that we find, for example, in the Ten Commandments, lo sirsach, lo sinaf, lo signov, etc. Ela shchita bishlama onesh ksiv. So the Gemara says that we found a penalty for slaughtering outside. Ela azhara minalan. Where do we know that such a thing is forbidden? V'achar yagia rabba, after an intensive Talmudic discussion, Amru sham ki akosuv amar sham taaleh v'sham taaseh. That the pasuk in Sefer Dvarim says, when referring to the Beis HaMikdash, there you shall offer up and there you shall do. So what does it mean, there you shall offer up and there you should do? Meaning specifically, you should do korbanos at the Beis HaMikdash. Makish aliyah la'asiyah. That the offering up is analogized to the doing, meaning the shechita. So he basically, since it says Sham Tasev, Sham Talev, Sham Tasev, since there's the two things in such close proximity right together in the verse, so you schlep over all the laws from one to the other, it's telling you that they have the same halachic purview. Ma liya anash vizir afazia anash vihiz here. So when it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to offer up, so included in that is you're not allowed to shecht, since we saw that there's a hekesh, there's an analogy made between offering up and shechting, in this pasuk, so we can't separate them. Perush Asiya Tichlo Hakol Bein Zvicha Bein Sreifa. So when it says Asiya Cham Taseh Olosecha, that means that it has to be that includes both the slaughtering and the offering up. So since you have basically that they're both together, they're never separated, so therefore, even though there's not an explicit penalty statement that says you're not allowed to shecht outside the Azara, we assume that since you're not allowed to offer up out of the Azara, so the laws would apply to Shechita as well, and there that's your Azhara, and then the penalty is stated in our Pasuk that it says that you'll be, you receive the penalty of Karis if you slaughter an animal outside the Beis HaMikdash courtyard. Yeah.
Issue here, which I think is about Eliyahu Hanavi and Rahel Carmel. Well, he, you know, this was not, you know, that, how was it possible for him, with, of course, you know, being commanded by Hashem to go ahead and violate this?
That's a famous question. That's a very good question. But that's, I mean, that's worse than what we're talking about right now. That the shchut techutz, we're talking about offering
right.
A korban.
Yes, both, right? Yeah.
They say it was a horas shah, that this was necessary for one time thing. So that the navi, even though we know that a later navi is not allowed to change anything in the Torah, that nevertheless there are certain times when you have ace lasos, when you have certain times where this was absolutely necessary in order to establish the kingship of God over the Jewish people. The people needed to recognize that and this was extremely necessary for this time period. So certain laws could be temporarily suspended, but not permanently suspended.
So I guess just like
a mitzvah. What's the reasoning behind it? Lefisha Hashem Baruch Hu kava makom liYisrael lahavi sham karbanosam lahachin sham levavam elav. That God established the Beis Hamikdash, that this is the place where the sacrifices are going to be offered, and that's not because that's the place where the sacrifices are being offered. So it's going to have the most profound effect on people's souls if they're all at this central imposing place, which is specifically designated for God's dwelling. Umito kvias hamakom v'agdalaso v'yiraso, that if people start shaking whenever they think of the Beis HaMikdash as one place, in other words, if there were a place where they could offer sacrifices on every block, so then they wouldn't have so much, they would think, okay, I could do it there, the Beis HaMikdash also is another place, okay, whatever, we're not so imposing. It's like, really, the halacha is similar to what you would think of nowadays with shuls also, that really the halacha is that the shul is supposed to be the most imposing structure in the town, tallest and whatever. Nowadays, we have shtibles galore, that in, you know, really Jewish neighborhoods, like Borough Park, Williamsburg, places like that, Flatbush, there's a little shtibel on every corner, so people think, the shul is just a place where I go in, I go to daven a little bit, I mostly to shmooze, to have some kugel at the kiddush. But really, the shul is supposed to be that's adversely affects one's the attitude that one's supposed to have towards the shul, which really is supposed to be the central imposing nice structure in the town, and you know you get a certain feeling when you go there as opposed to going to a shtibel.
You're also supposed to have only one shul, ideally, right?
I mean, I don't know if there was ever a community in history that only had one shul. I mean, there are always other places, you know, a little base medrash here and there where people, you know, gathered to learn Mishnayos, gathered to daven or something. I'm sure they would daven there sometimes. Right. I mean, ideally, because of Barov Am Hadras Melech, so it's better that to have all the people in the town go to one shul. But, again, there were always, it's very hard to have such a thing. You'd have to have a really small, cohesive community for such a thing to happen. It's very,
The New Square.
New Square, but that's correct, yeah. There's a certain, although, right, I mean, the Beis Medrash is also, and the New Square is also used for Titian and for other things, but, right, you have a certain feeling. When everybody goes to one central place, it creates a different feeling. Like, even in Israel, I mean, people obviously have their, you know, surely they have their selection of shtibels that they want to go to, but if you're a Belzer Chassid, you always daven in the huge Belzer Beis Medrash. It's very beautiful, and it creates a certain feeling. And actually there, what they did is they have a whole complex there. They have little shtibels underneath, which they use for weekday davening, and then they only use the main Beis Medrash for Shabbos and Yantif. And there's also a special tish room in that complex downstairs. They don't use the main Beis Medrash for Tishin, which they do in many other Hasidic circles. But it was for this reason that they should learn from the Belzers in this situation, that the room that's used for davening should not be used for anything else.
Well, Breuer says that. I mean, they now have other minyanim, but
Right. Burgers is very
much.
That's true.
That is used for davening and other things for other.
That's true. But
I mean,
this,
there is a minyan, the base matters then.
Right, and there's sometimes a 90 minute they daven, but you're right. But social activities do not take place, certainly, of course. In the shul, that's.
And there's a strong sense that that's the shul.
The shul, right. You're right. That's an example that's definitely closer to home. It's a good point. They, in fact, there they even go so far as even the bris they don't hold in the shul. That's apparently Rabbi Bor, even though, of course, the. I was talking to Rabbi Mantel about this, actually, at some point, a long time ago. So he said that Rabbi Breuer was so strong. It was always the practice that you held the bris in the shul. Of course, you hold the bris in the shul, but Rabbi Breuer was so strong, they felt this was a midah that really needed fixing nowadays, that, or in the 50s or whatever, he came up with this rule, that people treated the shul lightly. So he decided that the shul was going to be used for davening only, nothing else, even bris, and they held across the street in 90 Bennett.
Ah, so this is exactly the point then. I mean,
right.
What he was addressing was exactly the issue
yes,
he was talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Okay, so, continuing. That it will have a greater impact on your soul if you go to one central amazing place as opposed to the shtibalization of Judaism. And you'll have be your heart will be softer at that point, and you'll be able to accept the kingship of heaven in a greater manner. That whenever we offer a korban, God wanted it to be that we have the most ideal effect on our souls possible and the biggest atonement possible, so it's all centralized in one great place as opposed to little bamos, construct an altar wherever you want. Uchlal hadvarim, God did this to be good to us. God wants good stuff to happen to his creations, including getting the best atonement possible whenever they can. So God considered this as if you spilled blood if you offer a sacrifice anywhere else, because it's just, it's unnecessary slaughtering. Like it's just not, it's not the best use of this animal. The inyan hu ki Hashem lo hiter livnei adam basar bali chayim rak lecha paro letzorchei bnei adam, that God only allows us to kill animals if, for two reasons. One, it's for a sacrifice, that it's for atonement for us, so it's for our benefit as well. Or, if therefore, not ruchniyastika purposes, but gashmiyastika purposes, that if we need them for our own purposes, kigon mazon or refua choda reshesh b'shem tzorech bnei adam, like for food or for healing, let's say, even someone's a vegetarian, sometimes they have an iron deficiency, so doctors say they have to eat liver. So that's refuah. That's not really, they don't really want to eat it, but they have to eat it for medical purposes. So that's an, I think most vegetarians would agree, that's an, even that is an acceptable reason to kill an animal.
Some of them are very, very.
I said most. I understand. Some say maybe the pikuach nefesh of the animal overrides their own personal health.
Can they spell fanatic?
Anyway, but or if even for example leather, if you want to use maybe even furs, leathers, whatever, if it's required for your own bodily needs, so it is acceptable to kill the animal. You're considered to be spilling blood if you kill them for no reason. Maybe
hunting.
Like hunting. Maybe hunting is takas, or hunting is hunting might well be a problem. But if you kill the animal, again, your pleasure in killing them seems to be, according to the Sefer Chinuch here, not an acceptable reason. It has to be that you actually require the usage of their body for some reason. Yeah.
So you can't go fishing and then unless you're going to eat the fish.
Well, fishing you can throw it back alive, no?
Yes, you can, but you're getting a hook in its mouth. I mean,
but it heals, no?
It's not by the hand, just
no?
For your fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Except there were all these Rishonim, not all these, but there were the Rishonim who went hunting. You know, I forget the whole thing.
Oh yeah, the thing with the hawking and all that, right?
Yeah.
That.
Mm-hmm. Hawking.
Who writes about that?
Rabbi Slifkin, I think,
yeah.
Has written about that.
Oh, I'm sure he has.
That they went hawking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them in England, I think,
Tosfos,
even.
Tosfos,
mm-hmm. Oh.
No, he bought Tosfos. Yeah, we'll get you the,
Okay, we're happy to read up on it.
Second only to football.
I mean, it could be, it could be that not everybody agrees with this exact presentation. It could be that there would be people who would say that.
Also, I think those people were doing it to sort of get an in with the authorities.
Nobles, right.
Right.
That's also a consideration. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It was like meet and greet. You know?
Yeah, there are some times where we're more lenient if the person needs to get in with the government, so they'll be good to the Jews. Like, for example, you're not normally supposed to cut your hair in a way that's specifically Gentile. Again, if everybody cuts the hair a certain way, Jews and Gentiles, so then that's okay. There may be a kiyum, fulfillment of some sort to have a specifically Jewish hairstyle, but it's not usur, unless you actually cut your hair in a way that's miyuchad, specific to Gentiles. So they said that people who need to go get in close to the... Yeah, that's very good. That's a better word. People need to go sit in the court and ingratiate themselves, then they are allowed to cut their hair in the non-Jewish manner because they're not doing it for anything... Right. Trying to blend in with the goyim for its own sake, for example.
In that case, I guess if you're going talking with the nobles or something like that, it's not for no purpose at all.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So that would probably be allowed. Anyway... that it's killing an animal is not on the same level as killing a human being. That's very important for certain groups nowadays to remember, that they really take killing animals very, very seriously, which is not a bad midah in itself, that we should not try to kill animals as much as possible. But to consider it all even very close to the same level as a human life is completely, completely, completely incorrect, because a human life is much greater than the importance of an animal life. Yeah, exactly. Nevertheless, it's still called spilling blood, killing animals, which is extremely interesting. So it really has to be for a good reason. Valkain Amar Stam Shukishvichas Dam. So Dam Shafach, it says in the pasuk over here that if you shecht an animal outside a holy animal outside the base of Mikdash, then it's considered to be like spilling blood. Achar Shuhu Shofech Dama b'makom shenistavel l'shchita. So since you're spilling their blood, this animal is holy, it's designated to be a sacrifice. And now you're spilling its blood in a place where you're not going to get the ultimate benefit from its blood being spilt. That's terrible. Vein boza shchita to alas klal. There's no benefit to this slaughtering. Aval yesh b'davar nezek shavar al mitzvah zboro v'lechein anashoa kosu b'karis. That you, not only did you not do good, you did bad. You violated the will of your creator, and therefore you receive the penalty of karis. Midine hamitzvah. The halachos are as follows. The shechita and the offering up are two separate prohibitions. So, for example, you shecht the animal outside the base of Mikdash, and you offer it up in the base of Mikdash, you still chayav karis. The two separate prohibitions. So we're going to get to the negative prohibition of offering an animal up outside the base of Mikdash in mitzvah tof lamed tes. 439. So we have ways to go. So you're only chayev on, not only does it have to be a sanctified holy animal, but it has to be an animal that could be offered up as a sacrifice, and you're demoting it, so to speak, of the shechting it outside the base of Mikdash. But you're exempt if you shech something that's not allowed to go on the altar. Shenemar Lifnei Mishkan Hashem has to be before the tabernacle of God. So it's not appropriate to come into the Beis HaMikdash, then you're not chayav. So for example, if it's a Baal Mum, if it has a blemish that would render it invalid to be a sacrifice, then of course you would not be chayav. Also, if it's Oso Ves Beno, for example, there's a prohibition of slaughtering a mommy animal and a baby animal on the same day. Doesn't have to be a baby animal, any animal and its mother on the same day. Then if you had already shechted one of the two, and now you shechted the second one, since that could not be brought as a korban, then you would not be chayev. Another thing, if it's, of course, if it's mechusar zman, if it's not old enough to be a korban, etc., etc., etc. Of course, if also if the shechita is no good, if the animal is found to be a treifa, or if the animal, or if your shechita was invalid, has to be the type of shechita that would be in valid for the for a korban. Also, a very interesting halacha, which is that there we know that chatas ha'of and olas ha'of, that there are the way that you shecht bird offerings in the Beis HaMikdash is not by shechita, but by malika, where you go from the back of the neck with your fingernail and snap the trachea or the esophagus, or both as the case may be. So the question is, if you do that b'chutz, you're not chayiv, because there's no such thing. It doesn't have any effect if you do the malika outside. There's never a malika that exists outside the Beis HaMikdash, whereas, of course, we know there is shechita that exists outside the Beis HaMikdash for regular food. So, but if you shecht the animals that are real, that the birds that are really supposed to have malika done to them in the Beis HaMikdash, so then you are chayav for shechut echutz. Even though that exact avoda would be pasul, it wouldn't be invalid for the birds within the Beis HaMikdash. Nevertheless, they would still be chayav.
Wait, and so like
fine. V'noi yisur zeh. V'noi yisur zvicha b'chutz b'chol makom u'v'chol zman. That this is in all places and all times. Shafil ha-shochet behema hayom l'shem kodshim chayav. That you shecht an animal now for the sake of, and you say, I want to offer this as a korban, and you shecht it. Then you're chayav, you incur the penalty of kari zvachim. Amrina v'gimara meseches zvachim. B'mala b'chutz b'zman hazeh, Rabbi Yochanan amr chayav v'chein alachi paskes. Like Rabbi Yochanan, that you're chayav even nowadays. There are other opinions. The Minchas Chinuch points out that this is the opinion of the Rama, but Tosfos paskes like the other opinion. It's only chayav in a time when there is a mizbeach. So if there is a mizbeach, an altar where you could offer other sacrifices, and you offer it outside the Beis HaMikdash, then you're chayav, otherwise you're not chayav. Okay, so it says the Sefer Chinuch continuing. The over aleh v'shachad kodesh machutz v'mezid chayev karis afal pi shelo helo. So if you just shechted, even if you didn't offer it up, so you're still chayev karis. Meish shchatan chayev. You have to, again, it has to be a kosher shchita, but then you're chayev. Kichein amr zichron levracha chayev al shchita v'chayev aliyah chayev on both. The over v'shachad b'shogeg chayev l'avichat askua b'zman abayis. Obviously, for anything that says the penalty of karis, if you do it by accident, then you have to bring a chatas, which applies to someone who shechts outside as well. Mitzvah kufpei zayin. 187 mitzvahs kisui hadam. Has anybody here ever performed kisui hadam, the covering of blood?
No.
Sometimes at kaparos, when you go to do your kaparos, they allow you to perform the kisui hadam yourself, so you get that extra mitzvah right before Yom Kippur. Okay. Lechazos hadam achar zevichas chaya o'of, to cover the blood after the shechting of a wild animal or a bird. Shenemar asher yatzutzei chaya o'of asher yachel, somebody who traps an animal or bird which is eaten, v'shafach has damo v'chisav afar, if you spill its blood, you shall cover it with dirt, dust. Mishor sheha mitzvah, the reason for the mitzvah is as follows, v'sha nefesh tuli avadam, as we know that classically in Judaism, the soul is considered to be encapsulated in the blood, k'masha amarnu b'isur dam, that's why you're not allowed the blood in general, it's sort of like burying the dead. It's out of respect for the soul, which has been spilt, so you cover the blood to give it a shtickle type of burial.
Okay.
If you shecht something, you could develop a bit of cruelty in your persona, and you're trying to undo that by doing a counteraction that will fix your soul a little bit. You shouldn't just start gnawing away at the meat, and the soul of the animal is sitting there right in front of you.
Oh, there's something to that.
Hope so. Okay, which is very interesting, that the halacha of kisui adam does not apply to domesticated animals. So the Torah says chaya o'of. So in rabbinic Hebrew, there's a very clear distinction between a chaya and a behema. A chaya is a wild animal, a behema is a domesticated animal. In the language of the Torah, it's not as clear that when it uses the language of one, it doesn't mean the other as well. So the Chazal here had a tradition that here, even though the language in the Torah itself is chaya, which sometimes, again, the discussion, every time the Torah uses the word chaya or behemah, practically the Gemara goes off on saying, well, here is chaya b'chal behemah or behemah b'chal chaya. What exactly is the Torah referring to? What types of animals? Here the tradition is that when it says chaya, it really means what is called in rabbinic Hebrew by the term chaya, exclusively meaning a wild animal, a deer, gazelle, antelope, all these types of kosher wild animals, as opposed to domesticated animals, sheep, goats, cows. So you can't cover, the reason that the Torah exempted us from covering the blood of a domesticated animal is because the blood of a domesticated animal is used as a korban. So we don't just cover it, since it can be used as a korban, since this blood atones for us, we can't just cover it. It's used for a different purpose, meaning we have to know that this blood doesn't just get thrown away, it gets used on the altar. And obviously not this blood that you're shechting right now here in Mifflintown, Pennsylvania. It means that, that's birds, whatever. But
the blood of birds was not, just covered up in the basement, that wasn't used.
That's the next sentence, Zefer Chinuch. Yes, good. That's since you never cover the blood of mukdashin, the holy animals, and that's domesticated animals, obviously only. So there's no difference. The Torah doesn't want to confuse us between shechting, when we're shechting in the Beis HaMikdash, which we obviously can't cover, and when we're shechting regular non-holy animals. So we might the Torah wanted to make things easy for us. So there's one rule. Behemoths don't get covered, whether in the Beis HaMikdash or not in the Beis HaMikdash. Chayas, which are never offered up in the Beis HaMikdash, those you cover. V'im kein b'min ha'ofos, you're going to ask me a big question, based on the fundamental principle I just told you. Birds are also used in the Beis HaMikdash. So why do we have to cover the blood of birds?
Wait, is the blood of the birds used in the Beis HaMikdash?
Yeah. Sprinkle on the altar the same as the animals, yeah. There's certain birds that are offered on the altar as well. Muatu, but that is a very minority of the type of birds. It's only Torim and Bnei Yonah. It's only turtle doves and doves that can be, pigeons, whatever, that can be offered as a korban on the Mizbeach. Obviously, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of species of birds in the world, and only two of them can be offered on the Mizbeach. So since that's the case, then Odavar Mu'ah lo tafush haTorah la'olam. There's something so minute, so the Torah did not worry about it. Like we said before, most of the time in Torah law, you go according to the majority when you have a doubt about something, or here there's no doubt per se, but you're constructing a principle, a rule, so you take the majority into account and not the minority. So we have to, in other words, a behema. All behemos, things that are pure vadai behemos, can be used in the Beis HaMikdash, which are all goats, sheep and cows. That's pretty much, that's it. So those two, the Torah said, all behemos, no. All chayos, there's no. And now we're discussing the birds. So how do we categorize the birds? We said we don't cross over with the Kisui Adam category. Either the whole family is chayav in Kisui Adam, or the whole family is exempt from Kisui Adam. Now when we're judging the bird family, we have a problem. The two types of birds are required, are offered in the Beis HaMikdash, and you can't cover their blood. But 300,000, whatever, types of birds are not offered in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, since the majority are never offered in the Beis HaMikdash, so as a rule, as a category, we require birds to have Kisui Adam. So basically, the way the Sefer Chinuch is presenting it is, really you should have to cover the blood of everything that you shecht. It's just that the Torah exempted the domesticated animals because they're offered in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Torah didn't want to make a distinction between ones that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash and ones that were, which is very interesting. We don't really find such a thing in other types of halachos. Yeah,
want to actually make this
exactly. Yeah, the 100%. It's very interesting that the Sefer Chinuch presents it this way. and the Ramban apparently writes this way also, similar to the Sefer Chinuch in his commentary on the Torah. Medina HaMitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are, Masha Amar Zichronim Levracha, Shekisui Hadam, Noeg Bechol Of, or Bechol Chaya, that every type of bird and every type of wild animal, B'mezuman V'sheinu Mezuman, domesticated versus non-domesticated doesn't mean whether you happen to have it in your house or not. It means it's a certain type of family of animals. So maybe you have a deer that's living in your backyard and there's a fence around it, and any time you have a hankering for venison, you could just go into your backyard and shechteh with very little difficulty. So even if that's the case, you still have to perform kisui hadam. Below ne'amar asher yatzu de'el ba'oveh, but the pasuk says that a person who traps a chaya or a bird has to perform kisui hadam. So we assume that it's not talking about that. That it's not talking about ones that you actually trap, but it's just talking about behova, that the general way this was done, when you want to eat a chaya or when you want to eat a bird, you have to go and trap it. But it doesn't mean to the exclusion of these of chayos or birds that you happen to have available to you without needing to trap them. Similar, Dibur HaKosav Hoveh, the most famous example of Dibur HaKosav Hoveh, that the Torah is talking about the general way something is done, is Lo Sivah Shel Gidi B'Chalevimo. You shouldn't cook the blood of a kid in its mother's milk, which is not to the exclusion of the milk of another animal besides its mother, but rather that it's telling you that normally the way this was done is cooking the kid in its mother's milk, so therefore it's just Dibur HaKosav Hoveh, but really it applies to all meat and all milk. V'noeg b'chulin, obviously a behemoth, whatever, chayis v'shayla, whether it's the rice, the rabbanon for birds also. V'noeg b'chulin avalo b'mukdashin. This is applicable in chulin, obviously not korban animals, but not if in mukdashin, if the birds that are going to be worshipped in the base of mikdash, it obviously doesn't apply. Used in worship, not that you worship the birds. Yeah. Fine. V'noeg b'koi. A koi is an animal that it's unclear whether it's a chaya or a behema. Mipneishu safeki min chaya min behema. Ve'ein mevarchin b'chisuyo misafik. You don't make a bracha because there's a doubt, and you don't make a bracha when you have a doubt about something. V'dama nitas shveshal asakin chayev l'chasos. Let's say you don't have to cover all the blood. That's something we should be aware of. You don't have to. It's not like I'll have the unfortunate to give this example like. Zaka in Israel, when there's a terrorist attack, they collect every shred of blood and flesh that they can find in order to give it a burial. So they don't have to do that when you're trying to make kisui hadam. You have to collect all the blood of the animal, then cover it all. Rather, you have to do a token piece of it. You have to. So let's say all you have left is blood that, like one sprinkle of blood that spurted somewhere, or that's on the knife that you shechted with. So there's a little bit of blood there. You can't find any other blood. So you actually have to cover the blood that's on the knife, even though you think that maybe that's totally secondary. Really, you should only have to cover the blood that drained from the animal when you're shechting it. That's not the case. Obviously, if there is another blood that you would use that you would cover, you wouldn't use the blood that's on the knife that's hard to get off and cover and whatever. V'chsi v'shafach es damo v'chiso be'afar. Perush afilo mikzas damo. I mean, you spilled its blood and you cover it with dust, dirt. That means even part of the blood, not all the blood. V'tzorech ha'mechas elitein ofer lemata ulemala. You have to put blood on bottom and top. You not just sprinkle it on top. That's why when you shech techa, you have to have the ofer prepared in order to perform kisui hadam. You can't just put it on top. It's also the way that it comes to shechting a chaya on yantif, how exactly you perform kisui dam is also another question, because a lot of times, most of the time, dirt is dust is mukta, you're not supposed to handle it, so how do you have to set some aside before yantif, it's all shalom. The chol afar ba'olam shu dak b'chdi she'ena yotzer tzarech l'choscho roi l'chisui. So any type of dirt or dust in the world that is thin enough, that is finely ground enough, that a potter wouldn't need to crush it anymore in order to make pottery out of it, that is sufficient kisui hadam. So you can't like use rocks, for example.
You can't use sawdust either, obviously.
Anything that's called offer, even though it's not really offer, mechasin bo kegon zahav shachuk, even ground up gold.
Gold,
that's all you have available.
Gold comes from the ground if you want to, it's a right.
The trees also come from the ground.
Well, no, I bet.
Yeah, this is
right. So gold. So I thought that the case is brought that if you're traveling in the desert, okay, desert is sand, I guess. Yeah. Okay, if you're traveling in at sea, uh-huh. You're in a ship, and you're run out of provisions, but you happen to have a bird on the ship that you want to shecht and eat because that's all you have. So you have to perform kisui hadam. So where are you going to find offer on a ship? You're looking all around. You have. Maybe it's a pirate ship and you have treasure in the basement, the hold of the ship.
That kind of person.
The ancient mariner and the albatross. So
you have no choice. You have to grind up a gold coin in order to create offer to perform Kisui Hadam.
Can you take
I mean, you're going to compromise the structural integrity of the ship. But let's, yeah.
What do they do, actually, in commercial shkita? What do they use?
I mean, if you're going to set up a shkita, you could use anything. I don't know. Whatever dirt's available. I think they might use sawdust sometimes, okay. But they just get sand. They
What do they do with all this stuff that accumulates?
Again, you don't need so much of it, because you only need to cover part of the blood.
Oh, okay.
Again, how exactly it's set up in commercial shkitos, but it's easy. When you can plan in advance, it's not so hard to do it.
I believe that actually they use the large amounts of sawdust anyway because, you know, in order to...
Right, so that would make a lot of sense. So, Shenemar, ve'afros zahav lo. It has gold dust as well. It's a pasuk in Eov. So you see that the dust, the lotion of dust applies to gold as well, so you can use it to make Kisui Hadam. That if you saw that someone shechted and neglected to perform Kisui Adam, it's a mitzvah on you to go perform Kisui Adam.
Is the
oaf
kosher still?
Yeah, it doesn't affect the kashrus of the shechid, livnei Yisrael. The v'dorsh is chunam l'racha, mitzvah kol b'nei Yisrael, even though you're not the person who shechted, nor the l'chatchila, really the person who shechted is supposed to perform Kisui Adam, but if you... Yeah. Don't somehow, then somebody else has to perform Kisui Hadam on your behalf. There's also a halacha that the Minchas Chinuch brings that's very interesting. Obviously, first of all, it doesn't apply if the animal is found to be a treifa, has to be an animal that actually can be eaten. Because it says Asher Ye'ochel, this applies to Chaya or Rof that can be eaten. Mm-hmm. And it also does not apply, obviously, if you made a mistake in a Shechita and it's an Aveila, it doesn't apply. It also applies, there's a very interesting halacha that's subject to a lot of conceptual analysis, which is that if you put the blood down on the lower level of dust, for example, and wind comes and blows some dust on top of the blood, then you don't have to uncover it and perform Kisui Adam yourself. It doesn't need your maisa putting the blood on top of it in order to perform Kisui Adam.
The whole thing is really to raise your consciousness about the whole...
Right, but the maisa now it's covered, but... If the wind comes again and knocks the dust off and you see the blood again, then you have to recover it. But it's not the case if you perform Kisui Adam, you actually put the offer on top, and then you've done your mitzvah. So then if the wind comes and knocks the offer that you put on top, then you don't have to do it again, because you did your mitzvah already. So there the mitzvahs are sort of done for you, Mimela, so if it gets undone, so you have to do it.
So this is
uncovered. This I don't know. But you are supposed to do Kisui Adam, by the way, with your hand. You're not supposed to just kick dirt onto the blood, because that's considered to be to do the mitzvah in a derech bizayon, in a not proper, not nice way. V'yezer prater b'chulin perek Kisui Adam. There's a whole perek in Maseches Chulin called Kisui Adam. With extensive discussions about the halachos of this mitzvah. And I guess b'chol makom v'chol zman mizichar munikevos applies to men and women. V'over alev alokisa dam chayav v'of bital asay. Obviously, it's a mitzvah zeshelo azman grama. It applies to males and females because it's any time you shecht you have to do it. It does not apply to a particular time. If you violated it and you didn't cover the blood, then you neglected to perform a positive commandment.